I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Get Civical.
This is the podcast that breaks down politics, government structure, and dives into the context of current events, but in a super fun way. I'm Lizzie Stewart, comedian, feminist, and political junkie.
And I'm Arden Walentowski, former Senate intern, campaign staffer, and political strategist.
In this episode, we're talking about the Exxon Valdez oil spill.
So grab your double hull design.
And let's get civical. Everybody.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome back to Let's Get Civical. I am Lizzie Stewart.
And I am Arden Walentowski.
And I don't even know what to say.
What to say.
I feel like spring is near and far.
She feels very far away.
The month of March is like
very far
over.
Away. Uh-huh.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Because we just got here.
Yeah.
I'm so discombobulated.
Yes. We've been upstate twice in the past
You really
week.
Have. Uh-huh. You really have been upstate twice.
Because we drove up yesterday, literally just for the day. And it had frozen over in the time that we had left, which was only like 2 days before that.
Yeah.
And that was, nice for a December
totally.
Day upstate. Not a March day upstate.
Yeah.
When you're like, I want to be done with that. And I want to be moving on. And I want to see flowers.
Totally.
And thumper rabbits. And
Thumper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Deer. I want to be seeing those things. Not ice.
Not ice. No, we are really in winter's last stand, which is not cute.
It's not cute.
Nor acceptable.
No,
we don't. I'm over it.
Done.
Genuinely.
Bye.
Genuinely over it. Bye. Mm-hmm.
Bye.
And so, yeah. So we're just pushing through.
Yes, we're pushing through.
And we are here. How am I going to do this?
You're doing a great job. You're right ready. There on the cusp of
I know,
the transition.
I feel like, I mean, we just want to honor the beauty of spring and nature, which when you think of spring, you think of new life, you think of blossoming, and the biggest threat to that is, of course, fossil fuels.
Is, of course, oil spills. Yes.
Is oil spills fossil fuels.
I mean, yes. And human.
And so there we are.
And human selfishness.
And human selfishness. I feel as though, mm-hmm. I mean, we're back in our disaster era.
Listen, it's my go-to when I am coming up dry and I'm like, I'm feeling disaster-related.
Yeah, the well is dry. Let's talk about a time when we just really messed it up.
We really messed it up.
And that's what we're doing today.
Mm-hmm.
We did get a law
passed out of this disaster, which, yes.
Incredible.
Yes.
No, incredible. And we love when laws get passed out of disasters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we've talked about EPA happening because of disasters. So, yes, I think that will be the silver lining today.
Yes.
But before we get to the silver lining, we have to talk about the incident itself. So today we're talking about Exxon Valdez and the oil spill that came from her.
Sure.
From it. Around it. I don't really know I wasn't alive.
Yes. I was four.
You were four. Mm-hmm. I wasn't alive. You were four. And this was a disaster.
It was bad.
Catastrophe,
if
you will.
It was real bad.
It was bad. So let's talk about how bad it was. And I can't wait to find out how it could have been prevented, because I'm sure
so many things, like,
oh, super,
really simple.
Incredible.
This is all human error, because of course this is all
we are
human
in
error.
Our human error disaster.
Yes.
Era.
Yes. This is
really
all human error. Yeah.
This is our human error series.
Yes. Yes.
On Exxon Valdez.
Yeah.
So before we jump in, do you want to talk about the sources
that
you pulled?
Sure. So we have three today. We have NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Love them.
There was a special counsel, because of course there was, because this was an utter catastrophe.
Totally.
There was a special trustee counsel that looked into the disaster. It was called the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council. And so they issued a full report, which was very informative, very detailed, and it was issued through the state of Alaska. So a lot of this is coming from them. And then, of course, triedandtruehistory.com, who released a lot of information about the aftermath of the spill and the part that Exxon Valdez played in the aftermath and all the money they had to pay and what happened to the ship and blah, 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 blah. So
I love this like impulse where a disaster strikes and everybody goes, somebody get a council!
Uh-huh, it's great.
We gotta get a council!
We need a council. Somebody needs to study this. We need answers.
Somebody needs to write a report at the council.
Yes.
Well, yes. Before we get to the council, let's talk about what happened to cause the need of a council. So here's what happened. On March 24th, 1989, the oil tanker Exxon Valdez ran aground in Prince William Sound, Alaska, spilling 11 million gallons of oil.
That's a lot of oil.
That's a lot of oil.
It's a lot of oil.
That's a lot of oil in the water.
Yeah.
The ecologically sensitive location, season of the year, and large scale of this spill resulted in one of the largest environmental disasters in U.S. history.
Yeah.
I would say 11 million gallons, yeah.
It's a lot of oil.
I hope we haven't gotten too much bigger than that in terms of disaster.
Yeah.
No one anticipated any unusual problems as the Exxon Valdez left Alaska Pipeline Terminal at 9:12 p.m. Alaska Standard Time on March 23, 1989. The 987-foot ship, second newest in the Exxon Shipping Company's 20-tanker fleet, was loaded with, 53,094,510 gallons of North Slope crude oil bound for Long Beach, California. So this episode is actually really interesting because it's both a shipwreck and
an oil
natural
spill.
Disaster.
Yes, yes. Yes, it's a crossover event. It's a crossover event.
This is Women's History Month. Yes. This is our Women's History Month event.
Yes. There is a woman on board this ship. She comes up later. Her name is Maureen.
Okay, I can't wait for her. Tankers carrying North Slope crude oil had safely transited Prince William Sound. The saying Prince William Sound.
It's very hard.
Is hard.
It's hard.
I'm going to stutter over this every time.
Prince William Sound. It's very hard.
Tankers carrying North Slope crude oil had safely transited Prince William Sound more than 8,700 times in the 12 years since oil began flowing through the Trans-Alaska pipeline with no major disasters and few serious incidents. So they're saying we do this all the time.
Yeah, we do this all the time.
We do this every day. Mm-hmm. Oil on these tankers, which are big, what, steel ship type thingies?
Yep.
Back and forth.
Back and forth. We do it all the
forth.
Time. They know the rope. They know the patterns.
No issues.
Yep.
Boop, boop, boop. This experience gave little reason to suspect impending disaster. You get too comfortable.
I think they did.
You get too comfy cozy.
I think they
you
did.
Get too comfy cozy, and then suddenly there's 11 million gallons of oil in Prince William Sound.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Less than 3 hours after the Exxon Valdez left her dock, it grounded at Bly Reef, rupturing 8 of its 11 cargo tanks and, like I said, spewing some 11 million gallons of crude oil into the water, into Prince William Sound.
Yes.
So we've done this thousands of times.
Yes.
She leaves port on one side of the sound, I assume. And then something happens, and I'm sure we're going to get, we're going to talk about what happens.
We're going to talk about it. It's
and
not
she
gonna...
has run aground.
Yes.
On a reef.
On a reef. Yep.
On a reef.
Yep.
And now oil, spill, 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 spill.
Yep.
Yikes.
Yikes, McGikes. So we're going to talk about how we got to sitting on top of a reef. And we're going to back it up a little bit because the day's events play a huge part. Like the day's events in terms of like what the captain did, the crewmen, all of this, like all of their doings, their going abouts during the day played a huge event. They were all huge factors into the disaster and what happened. So the Exxon Valdez had reached the Alaska Marine Terminal at 11:30 p.m. on March 22nd to take on its cargo. It carried a crew of 19 plus the captain. Third mate Gregory Cousins, who became a central figure in the grounding, was relieved of watch duty at 11:50 p.m.
Uh-oh.
On March 23rd, 1989, it was a rest day of sorts for some members of the Exxon Valdez crew. Captain Joseph Hazelwood, remember this name, Joseph Hazelwood, Chief Engineer Jerry Glowacki, and Radio Officer Joel Robertson left the Exxon Valdez at about 11 a.m., and were driven from the terminal into the town of Valdez by a Marine pilot who had piloted the Exxon Valdez into port the previous night and would take it back out through the Valdez Narrows on its fateful trip to Bly Reef. So they leave the ship and they go into town like as a little group because they're waiting for the cargo to be loaded and they're like expecting this to take all day. So they're like, okay, we're going to go into town. We're going to get some food.
If one of them gets drunk, I swear to God. I swear
to God, if I mean, this is all over some disaster? Tequila.
Are you writing this disaster?
Oh. Not men not being able to know how to hold their liquor being the reason for one of the biggest environmental disasters.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
Go, carry on.
Okay.
Carry on.
Okay, here we go. When the ship's officers left the terminal that day, they expected the Exxon Valdez sailing time to be 10 p.m. that evening.
Okay, so they left in the morning. They left at 11 a.m. and yes. They're like, we need to be back by 10 p.m. because that's when we're leaving.
Yeah, well, they needed to be back a little bit sooner than that because they have to go through security. They have some stuff to do. But they expected to leave at 10. So they, you know, whatever they had planned, they like that's how much they had budgeted in for their brain to return. Possibly. Sure. Do you know what I mean?
They're like, we've got probably, I can heavily drink for 6 hours and then spend the next 5 hours recovering and be good to go. Pilot a ship or whatever you say.
Sure.
By 10.
By 10.
I'll be sober by 10.
Right. The posted sailing time, however, was changed during the day. When the party arrived back at the ship at 8:24, they learned the sailing time had been fixed to 9 p.m. So they've
30
shaved
minutes,
off.
Boys.
Get ready. Get ready. Because you've got 30 minutes.
You've got 30 minutes to sober up.
Mm-hmm.
Or your parents, so your parents don't know that you've been drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, no. Also, it's like, yes, 10 p.m. is later than 9 p.m. So I'm like, if you were so much more messed up at 9 p.m. than you would have been at 10 p.m., you still didn't play this day right.
No, they didn't. No. And it's one guy in particular who did not play his day right.
Well, let's talk about the men. Let's talk about what the men did with their days.
Yes.
Let's find the culprit. I can't wait to figure out which one of these suspects
there's a couple,
really
but
blew
yes,
in.
Yes. Go ahead.
Captain Hazelwood spent most of the day conducting ship business, shopping, and, according to testimony before the National Transportation Safety Board, drinking alcoholic beverages with the other ship's officers in at least 2 Valdez bars.
Yes.
Uh-oh.
It's
not the captain getting drunk.
Uh-huh.
I like that he was like, so I was out doing some ship business. You know, I went to like get some ship stuff and I went to talk to some ship people to make sure the ship was good.
Right. Totally.
At some point, I can't remember when, I did stop to have a drink or 5.
Or 5. Can't remember exactly.
Can't remember. Can't recall. And then but ship business. I did ship business.
And I also did some shopping.
Right. Testimony indicated Hazelwood drank non-alcoholic beverages that day at lunch, a number of alcoholic drinks late that afternoon while relaxing in a Valdez bar, and at least one more drink at a bar while the party waited for pizza to take with them back to the ship. Is this a fraternity?
I think so. I think
is this Kappa Kappa Delta? Like what?
I think Kappa Kappa Exxon is what this is.
Kappa
like, are
Kappa
you kidding
Exxon?
Me?
Exxon. Yikes McGikes.
I know.
Not you having multiple alcoholic drinks late in the afternoon. So that to me means what? Like, what's late afternoon? 4
3,
o'clock?
4, yeah.
3, 4?
Uh-huh.
And again, you're deciding to drink multiple drinks at 3/4 o'clock thinking I'll be fine by 10 p.m.
Right.
When we are at sea.
Right.
So that's what Captain Hazel was up to. He was drinking. He had lunch.
He had lunch. Sober.
Then drink.
Right.
Then another drink while waiting for pizza, probably with the assumption that, like, I'll have this pizza and then I'll be fine to drive.
Right.
The fucking ship. The tanker.
With 53 million gallons of oil.
They're like, let's go back to the ship.
My God.
Loading of the Exxon Valdez had been completed for an hour by the time the group returned to the ship. Radio Officer Robertson, who commenced pre-voyage tests and checks in the radio room soon after arriving at the ship, later said no one in the group going ashore had expected the ship to be ready to leave as soon as they returned. AKA, we all expected to have an hour to sober up.
Exactly.
Before having to drive the ship.
Right.
And like, maybe we talk about this, but like, okay, you went to town. You got buck wild because you thought you had time to go buck wild. You come back and you're like, uh-oh, I'm too buck wild. You have to say, I can't drive this ship.
Right.
Like, you literally have to say, hey, I know that our time is now 9 p.m., but I'm so
I'm drunk.
I can't possibly drive this tanker right now. I literally am too messed up to drive this tanker.
Right. Like, have you not seen Titanic?
Hello?
Like,
this is 1989. And they weren't even drunk in the Titanic. The people on the Titanic, they were just cocky.
They were
just like, we'll just go fast.
We'll just go fast.
In the middle of the ice. Yeah. We'll just go.
It's
a
different type
fast.
of like
negligence.
Negligence and machoism and male, whatever you want to call it. But like,
yeah.
Yes.
Sure. Okay. So they're back and they're like, we didn't expect to have to leave at 9 instead of 10.
Right. I'm wasted.
That extra hour really could have made the difference.
I really wanted to eat this pizza and take a little cat nap.
Both the cab driver and the gate security guard later testified that no one in the party appeared to be intoxicated. Well, then they must have been sober. A ship agent who met with Hazelwood after he got back on the ship said it appeared the captain may have been drinking because his eyes were watery, but she did not smell alcohol on his breath. Again, I'm like, none of these things...
Because he ate the pizza.
Matter.
Right.
Like, he was drinking, sounds like heavily.
Right.
Before having to cast off.
Right.
Ship's pilot Murphy, however, later indicated that he did detect the odor of alcohol on Hazelwood's breath. I love that everybody's just like, you're good.
Right. It's the smell test.
You're good. Okay.
Because also, this is probably not the first time he did this. He probably did this all the time.
No, it seems to me... that this is like their schedule.
Right.
Like this is what they do. They're like, cool. We do this every time. We've been doing this trip back and forth hundreds of thousands of times.
Yep.
So yeah, as long as I get the pizza in my body by 8 p.m.
We're good.
I'm good.
We're good.
I could steer a plane.
Yeah.
At 10 o'clock.
Yeah. So at 11:52 p.m., the command was given to place the ship's engine on load program up, which is a computer program over the span of 43 minutes that would increase engine speed from 55 rpm to sea speed full ahead of 78.7 rpm. So we're going fast.
We're going fast.
We're going fast. After conferring with Cousins about where and how to return the ship to its designated traffic lane. So there's like inbound and outbound traffic lanes in Prince William Sound. Hazelwood left the bridge. So the intoxicated captain has now left the bridge.
He's like, let's figure out how to get on the road.
Right. And he leaves.
I want us to go this way.
Right.
You call me when we're there.
Right. And he leaves Cousins basically in charge.
Great.
The time, according to the safety board, testimony was approximately 11:53. By this time, third mate Cousins, the guy he's left in charge, the guy that Captain Hazelwood has left in charge, third mate Cousins had been on duty for 6 hours and was scheduled to be relieved by second mate Lloyd Lacaine. But Cousins, knowing that Lacaine had worked long hours during loading operations during the day, had told the second mate he could take his time in relieving him. Cousins did not call Lacaine to awaken him for the midnight to 4 a.m. watch, instead remaining on duty himself. So now...
here we go.
He's over his time. Like, this is also bad. Like, this report is like, yes, this captain was probably drunk. This played a huge part in it.
Yeah.
But also, there were just safety... like, they completely ignored safety measures that are in place for a reason.
Right. It's like, you're not... nobody needs you to be a hero, Cousins.
No. Like,
literally wake him up.
Wake him up. Like,
upsy daisies.
Right.
I don't care if you've worked a long shift. You've been asleep for 5-6 hours.
Right.
Yeah, we would all like more.
Right.
We would all like more, but that's not how this works.
Right. Because you know what he has had? Some sleep.
Some sleep. You know what you haven't had?
Any sleep. Right.
But he's like, no, it's okay, bro.
I got
it's
you.
Okay, bro.
I got you. I can take it.
I got you. You sleep, bro. You need it. You've been loading the ship. Sleep. It's all good.
No.
I'm fine.
Yeah. And I fall asleep. I mean, he doesn't fall asleep. He stays awake. I mean, but his reaction time is not good. Because also, I think he's literally like the only one on like watching things. Because he doesn't
only
have a second.
Working this tanker.
Right. So he lets Lacaine sleep. And he remains on duty to do the midnight to 4 a.m. watch. Cousins is the only officer on the bridge. And it's a huge fucking tanker. Like, we'll post a picture of this on Instagram when we do the episode. It is a huge fucking tanker. So the fact that he is the only one. Right. Like, you can't see from one end to the other.
Right. Like, there's 53 million gallons.
It's huge.
Of crude oil on this tanker.
It's also a situation, like, the fact that he was the only officer on the bridge that violated company policy. And this is according to, like, the trustee council report. Perhaps contributed to the accident. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because how
can you tell?
Right. It's midnight. It's dark. Like,
there's one guy.
There's one guy.
We got third mate cousins.
Right. This is, do we not know the movie? Iceberg right ahead. Like, come on.
Right. There were two of those.
Right.
There's a whole crew.
There's a whole crew.
Their reaction time was.
Yes.
Fire.
Fire. A second officer on the bridge might have been more alert to the danger in the ship's position. The failure of its efforts to turn, the autopilot steering status, and the threat of ice in the tanker lane. So there were all these things going on. Like,
yeah,
he had a hard time. Like, he basically did what they did in trying to turn the Titanic.
Right.
Not the same mechanisms by any means, but they had a hard time turning the tanker. It's full of ice because it's Alaska. So they're also they end up hitting ice, which is what punctures. I mean, it's basically the Titanic all over again, which is what punctures the tanker and releases the oil. But anyway, so you'll keep telling us about the rest of it. But it's like you've got drunk sailors.
You've got what do you do with a drunken sailor? What do you do with a drunken sailor? You don't let him run a tanker aground. No, ma'am.
No, ma'am. And you like, this isn't even like, you know. They were ignoring company protocols. Not even like, I'm sure maybe it is also a federal regulation, but like your for-profit company is saying two dudes.
Two dudes, guys.
Two dudes, man.
I don't care which two. I don't care what state you're in. It's got to be two.
So let's talk about what happened. Let's talk about the impact. The da-ba-pow.
We've got only cousins on the bridge trying to turn this thing. There's ice in the water. There's things going awry. The autopilot's not working. And we just have sweet cousins to try to get us through this. And I don't think he's going to do a good job of that. So accounts and interpretations differ as to events on the bridge from the time Hazelwood left his post to the moment the Exxon Valdez struck Bligh Reef. Testimony by crew members and interpretations of evidence by the state of Alaska conflict in key areas, leaving the precise timing of events still a mystery. But rough outlines are discernible. So this is roughly what we know.
Yes.
Lookout Maureen Jones reported that Bligh Reef light appeared broad off the starboard bow, which basically means off the bow at an angle about 45 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
The light should have been seen off the port side, the left side of the ship facing forward.
Mm-hmm.
Its position off the starboard side indicated great peril for a super tanker that was out of its lanes and accelerating through close waters. So we have this lookout being like, there's this light that's usually supposed to be over here on the right side, and it was actually on the left side, which means that we're not facing the right way.
We're not in the correct position. We're way outside of our lane, and we're going to hit something because we're, like, the light is acting as kind of a buoy, right? Like, it's you're supposed to stay on the other side.
Totally. And we are off course.
Way off course.
She's like, uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Not good.
Over there. You're supposed to be over there. Oh no.
Oh no. These drunken sailors.
Oh my God. And Maureen's like, oh, they've been drinking. Cousins gave right rudder commands to cause the desired course change and took the ship off autopilot. So he's like, oh, shit.
Yes, he's trying to steer.
Pulling.
Yes.
We've got to get back. We've got to get the light on the right side. He also phoned Hazelwood, Captain Hazelwood, in his cabin to inform him that the ship was turning back toward the traffic lanes and that in the process, it would be getting into ice. So he's like doing this, and then also being like, Hazelwood, okay, yeah. We've got a bit of a situation. I got to turn it really far to the right. We got to go into the ice or else we're going to hit something. The light's worse. On the right. It's supposed to be on the left. It's really bad
up here. If you could awaken out of your stupor, I need some help.
Just whenever you get a chance. Yeah, maybe just to get some coffee in you and then just head up here. I'll manage. Like, this poor guy.
I know.
It's like, oh my God, I should have.
I shouldn't have let Lacaine sleep, man. Dude. Get the fuck up here.
When the vessel did not turn swiftly enough.
No, because it weighs 50. It's 53 gallons of oil. Minus the weight of the tanker, minus the weight of all of the other crap that's on it and the humans. Like, are you kidding me?
It's so heavy.
This is a slow turn. Yeah, it is a sloth of a machine.
So when the vessel did not turn swiftly enough, Cousins ordered further right rudder with increasing urgency. Yeah. I do feel bad for him. This is a well-meaning person who's literally trying to turn right within an inch of his life.
Yes.
He's like, please, dear God, what do I have to do to get this ship? Go to the right. Increase the power!
More steam!
Finally, realizing the ship was in serious trouble.
Yeah, dude.
Cousins phoned Hazelwood again.
Like, why the fuck is this dude danger. Not oh on my deck? God.
So he's like at the steering wheel, like the thing is to the right. He's like, hey, this is really bad. If you could come up here, I just think it's actually a lot worse than I first thought. I think we're getting really bad trouble. I don't know what to do. I try it. We're as far to the right as I could get us.
It doesn't go anymore.
It won't go anymore.
This poor dude.
Oh, man. So he's on the phone with Hazelwood being like, please come. And at the end of that conversation, he's on, he can't go. They felt an initial shock of the vessel. So,
yep.
Did you feel that? What was that? I don't know. I'm just trying to keep it to the right.
Yes.
The grounding, described by helmsman Robert Kagan as a, quote, bumpy ride, and by Cousins as 6, quote, very sharp jolts, occurred at 12.04 a.m. So, doom. The vessel came to rest facing roughly southwest, perched across its middle on the pinnacle of Bligh Reef. 8 of the 11 cargo tanks were punctured. Oh, dear.
Bad.
Computations aboard the Exxon Valdez showed that 5.8 million gallons had gushed out of the tanker in the first 3.25 hours. So that is half of what ended up in Prince William Sound happened in the first 3 hours.
Yeah.
Yikes. Hazelwood, Captain, perhaps drunk. Certainly facing a position of great difficulty and confusion, would struggle vainly to power the ship off its perch on Bligh Reef. Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't...
Which is so interesting because if he's still drunk at midnight when this is crashing, that means that whatever he was drinking at 4 p.m., he was never going to be sober by 10.
He was never going to be sober. No. It was never going to happen. No. And I didn't put this, all of the notes in here because it was like a minute by minute, play by play of like all of what he did to try and get this vessel off of the reef.
I can't even imagine.
But it was like, and he's also basically fighting with his crewmen of like, give it more power. And they're like this is insane. And he's like, give it more power. Like, you know, and finally he just kind of gives up. But like, because it's stuck on the reef.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
We can't make this worse. We can't lose the other three cargo tanks that we have.
Right. So let's talk about the aftermath. At least there were no human lives lost as a direct result of the disaster, although four deaths were associated with the cleanup effort. Indirectly, however, the human and natural losses were immense, obviously, to fisheries, subsistence, livelihoods, tourism, and wildlife.
Yeah.
The most important loss for many who will never visit Prince William Sound was the aesthetic sense that something sacred in the relatively unspoiled land and waters of Alaska had been defiled. Yeah.
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 I mean, you can only clean up so much.
Yes.
But ultimately, like, this shit's in the environment now. This is 11 million gallons of crude oil.
Yeah. In the months after the Exxon Valdez oil spill, Exxon employees, federal responders, and more than 11,000 Alaska residents worked to clean up the oil spill. Exxon paid about $2 billion in cleanup costs and $1.8 billion for habitat restoration and personal damages related to the spill. Cleanup workers skimmed oil from the water surface, sprayed oil dispersant chemicals in the water and on shore, washed oil beaches with hot water, and rescued and cleaned animals trapped in oil. Environmental officials purposefully left some areas of shoreline untreated so they could study the effect of cleanup measures, some of which were unproven at the time. Yeah, because, like, they didn't really know.
I get it.
Yeah, I get it. Like, they didn't really know what would work and what wouldn't.
Yeah.
They later found that aggressive washing with high pressure, hot water hoses was effective in removing oil, but did more ecological damage by killing the remaining plants and animals in the process.
Mm.
Yes, you remove the oil. Mm. But yeah, when you power it with hot water at a high pressure, you end up killing the plant.
Yeah.
Like, just think about your house plants. What would they do?
Right. Right. So one of the areas that was oiled but never cleaned is a large shoreline boulder called Mearns Rock. Scientists have returned to Mearns Rock every summer since the spill to photograph the plants and small critters growing on it. They found that many of the mussels, barnacles, and various seaweeds growing on the rock before the spill returned to normal levels about 3 to 4 years after the spill. Prince William Sound had been pristine wilderness before the spill. The Exxon Valdez disaster dramatically changed all of that, taking a major toll on wildlife. Oh, this makes me sad.
I know.
It killed an estimated 250,000 seabirds,
so many.
3,000 otters, 300 seals, 250 bald eagles, and 22 killer whales.
Insane.
It's so much.
All because this motherfucker went drinking.
All because somebody had to go get tequila at 4 p.m.
Right.
On a work day. The oil spill also may have played a role in the collapse of salmon and herring fisheries in Prince William Sound in the early 1990s. Sure.
Makes sense.
Fishermen went bankrupt, and the economies of small shoreline towns, including Valdez and Cordova, suffered in the following years. Yeah, nobody wants to go to a place where there's oil in the water or on the beach. Some reports estimated that the total economic loss from the Exxon Valdez oil spill to be as much as $2.8 billion. That's like 1 billion shots of tequila. You know what I mean?
I know.
Do that math. The spill had killed an estimated 40% of all sea otters living in the sound. The sea otter population didn't recover its pre-spill levels until 2014, which was 25 years after the spill. It took 25 years for them to get their numbers back up.
Yep.
Stocks of herring, a once lucrative source of income for Prince William Sound fishermen, have never fully recovered. So those fish have never gotten back up.
No.
We can't get those numbers back up.
No. In the wake of the Exxon Valdez oil spill, the U.S. Congress passed the Oil Pollution Act of 1990, which President George H.W. Bush signed into law that year. The Oil Pollution Act of 1990 increased penalties for companies responsible for oil spills and required that all oil tankers in the United States waters have a double hull. This was a huge problem. It only had a single hull. So when it when it got punctured, out came the oil. So if you have a double hull.
It's just right there.
It's just right there. So if you have a double hull, it gets punctured. Yeah. You're not actually puncturing the thing that is containing the liquid. You're puncturing its first layer.
Right.
Exxon Valdez was a single-hulled tanker, a double-hull design by making it less likely that a collision would have spilled oil might have prevented the Exxon Valdez disaster.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right? The ship, the Exxon Valdez, was first commissioned in 1986, was repaired, and returned to service a year after the spill in a different ocean and under a different name. Because since they passed this law, it could no longer operate in U.S. waters. So I think it was sent to Europe. After many...
Perfect.
Yes. Yes, it was...
Let's go abroad.
Yes, it was sent to Europe. And from there, it went through many sales and name changes from Europe to Asia. Because then everybody started passing the similar laws. So it like went down through the countries. And finally, the ship collided many years later with another bulk carrier in the Yellow Sea and was once again severely damaged. The ship was renamed once more after the collision, becoming the Oriental Nicety.
No.
The Oriental Nicety was sold for scrap to an Indian company and dismantled in 2012.
Thank God. I mean, that's just like, look, there's not enough sage in the world to get the bad juju out of the Exxon Valdez.
Yes.
So I'm glad she's out of commission.
Yes.
Because I don't think shipping her abroad was the way to go. It's like, you know what? Let's just call this one a wash.
Call it a day. Call a spade a spade.
Call it a day. Let's call it a day. Well, moral of the story, kids, don't drink and drive an oil tanker or anything else.
Any kind of something.
And don't, I mean, like, Jesus Christ, like, just be professional. Like, if it's a summer Friday and you're drinking and you're going home for the weekend, live your life. Live your life. Mm-hmm. Drink at work. That's fine. But if you have, I don't know, a full day / night of sailing to do... Perhaps lay off the hooch.
Maybe don't.
Don't.
Yeah.
Maybe don't.
Yeah.
Drink when you get there.
Yes.
Jesus Christ. Anywho, that is our episode on the Exxon Valdez. And as always, if you like what you heard, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Let's Get Civical. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to us. We love you so, so much, and we will see you next Wednesday.
Goodbye.